Hello, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast, the podcast for pets and the people who love them. Now here's your host, veterinarian Dr. Roger Welton.
Hello, pet lovers, and welcome to the Space Coast Pet Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Roger Welton, a.k.a. Dr. Roger, coming to you from the Florida Space Coast. Thank you so much for tuning in today. Today we're going to be talking about America's top dog. As of this month, the American Kennel Club has put out their findings as to what the most popular dog breed is. I'm going to give you a little hint. It's no longer the Labrador Retriever. The Labrador Retriever is definitely up there as among the most popular breeds of dog in the United States. They had that thrown for quite a long time, which makes me very happy because I do have a special place in my heart for Labrador Retrievers. I've had at least one lab in my life for quite a long time, a couple of decades actually. But at any rate, they've been dethroned, and the new top dog, I'm not surprised. I see many of these a week. Sometimes I feel like that's all I see. And I want to talk about every nuance of this breed and why are they so popular? What issues could they potentially have from a health perspective? And what could you do as top dog breed enthusiasts to protect yourselves and ensure that you have a good, healthy pet that you adopt and are going to pay a lot of money for? They're also quite expensive. We'll get into all that. First, I have a really, really heartfelt email here from one of our favorite repeat offenders, Paula Q. Not sure if you're still a groomer. You've been a groomer for some time. I know you were hinting on phasing out of the groomer industry. It's a tough job. I don't blame you. But whatever it is you're doing, thank you so much for taking the time to email us this wonderful post, because it's just noteworthy, and I hope everybody pays attention. Once we finish this, we will dive into our topic. Hi, Dr. Roger. I hope all is well with you. Monday of this week, I listened to the episode, Oh No, Not the Cone, and your comment about fatigue in the profession made me think about something we had just gone through. My corgi has had some stomach upset for about a week, and nothing alarming but noticeable. We needed to have blood work done anyway, so I called our vet on Wednesday, April 17th, to schedule an appointment, and the soonest they could see us was Monday, April 22nd. Not terrible, but I was concerned about the gastric issue. That Saturday morning around 4 a.m., she started vomiting and had runny diarrhea, so I tossed her in the car and we headed to the nearest emergency vet. There was a sign on the door, on the locked door, that said they weren't offering 24-hour services at this time because of a staff shortage. By this time, she seemed to bounce back, so we headed home. I did some research about emergency options. The day went by without too much trauma, but around 5 that evening, she started having bloody diarrhea. I called the other facility I had decided on, and they asked me to wait until 6 or so to come in because they were waiting for a second doctor, and there was a long wait already. We were there by 6, checked in, and proceeded to wait. Fast forward 4 hours, and I went to the desk to make sure I didn't miss a call because we'd been waiting in the car where she has a comfy bed. When I approached the desk and asked if we missed anything, the girl behind the counter looked at me with abject fear in her face and immediately began to apologize for the wait. I stopped her and reassured her that I wasn't rushing them. I know there are more critical cases, and I just wanted to make sure I didn't miss them calling us in. 2 hours later, I thought I would go back in just to see what the status was, and there was a sign on the door that said they were temporarily closed. I had questions and went inside to find the same girl at the counter. When she saw me, the fear returned to her face, and she was desperate to explain that animal control had brought in two dogs that had been hit by cars and needed emergency surgery. She looked like she was going to cry. Again, I stopped her and told her not to worry and that I would just head home and maybe try again the next day. When I turned around, I saw it, a sign that said verbal and physical abuse of the staff will not be tolerated. Threats will be taken seriously, and offenders and their pets would be asked to leave. That explained the fear. She was waiting for me to verbally attack her, and it broke my heart. We got in to see our doctor on Monday at our regular appointment, and I took them a card with some chocolate expressing my gratitude for what they do. When we left there, I went to the same emergency clinic and made sure they knew I felt like they were doing a great job. The receptionist I handed the card candy to teared up. Unfortunately, it wasn't the girl I'd seen a few nights before, but I imagine they've all suffered their share of abuse. I'm sorry this email is so long, but this event really struck me. The fact that they have to have a sign warning against abuse is not okay. There is one in our regular vet's office as well, so it's my mission to spread gratitude and encouragement when and where I can. I'm sorry you all have to go through this, and I'm sorry this isn't funnier. My humor muscle is fatigued by several nights of minimal sleep. Thank you for what you do, Paula Q and the Corgi. Well, thank you for that email, Paula. The struggle is real sometimes, and especially at the emergency level. Staffing for those clinics can be extra challenging, and we have our challenges staffing our regular clinics as well. You know, the overnights, those overnight shifts can wear on the soul with the weirdness that it creates in the sleep-wake cycles, and so, you know, people are leaving the profession in droves, and that includes doctors, it includes technicians, it includes receptionists. A lot of it is the fatigue that we're talking about. Some of it also, though, is you know, at the emergency level related to maintaining those hours is challenging. And so, I really feel for them, and I really appreciate you sharing this. I think at all levels of care, meaning customer care, I think we should all have compassion for everybody, not just veterinary, but our human caregivers. How about just going to McDonald's or where I was last night at Outback? They were understaffed, and this one server is just doing her darndest to try to keep up because somebody had called out. And you know what? Same thing like Paula. I was just so grateful for her doing the very best she could, and we were patient, and we should all just exercise that and have some empathy. So thank you for spreading that empathy, Paula. Really appreciate it. Let's keep those emails coming. I love listener email commentary. But on to Top Dog. So, is the suspense killing you? What is it? It is the French Bulldog. I'm sure it's no surprise to many of you. I'm sure some of you, as we're listening, it's been in the back of your mind that you're considering going out and getting one of these dogs. Sometimes I feel like all I see is either doodles, Frenchies, or both all day long. It's funny, the American Kennel Club couldn't have a consensus on doodles because there's too many different kinds of doodles. Everything's been doodled, so they're not really a breed in and of themselves. So maybe doodles as a whole, I think, if we considered everything that's been doodled in the world, meaning mixed with some manner of poodle, whether it's standard or a miniature or everything in between, I think there's probably more doodles in the world. I think they would overtake the French Bulldog, but hard to create that standard because there is a Golden Doodle, Labradoodle, Sheepadoodle. I'm not going to stop there. But French Bulldogs, however, are a legitimate breed, and they are now the most popular breed. So why are they so popular? I will say, you know, from my own perspective, and enjoying my Frenchie patients that I see. They're very personable, really charismatic little dogs. You always know when they enter the room. They're always so excited. They're full of energy. They have great expressions. They're very full of expression. You can sort of, they wear their heart on their sleeves, so to speak. You kind of always know how they're feeling, what they're thinking. They have these great big expressive eyes. They have some of the pushed-in face of the English Bulldog, but not so severe. And so they look like more of a dog, I would say, than an English Bulldog. They have big expressive ears, and their ears often kind of mimic how they're feeling, if they're standing upright or if they're sideways or if they're back or they're forward. You kind of know how a Frenchie's feeling by their ear position. And you know, they're good apartment dogs. You know, they're somewhere between 20 and 30 pounds usually, unless they're morbidly obese, which happens more too often. Going to put that out there. But, you know, they fit well in apartments or townhomes, small houses. They tend to be contagious. So with their reasonably small size, it's easy to have two or three of them. And they're a lot of fun. They fetch. They're, you know, very active, playful dogs. And so they're really a fun family dog. And boy, people love their Frenchies because of all those reasons. So why are me and a lot of veterinarians a little bit concerned about them being the most popular breed? Well, it's the same concern I have for anything that becomes popular. It's the, ready for this? The breeders. I should say quote unquote breeders, because every something becomes popular, there's a demand. Well, you know, guess who's going to be looking to cash in on it? Every Tom, Dick, and Harry that can throw enough dollars together, buy a couple of dogs, and get them to mate and sell the offspring. They're not caring about doing any genetic screening. They might not be breeding at the right ages. They might be propagating all manner of genetic disease. Frenchies, let's face it, already a very weakened breed. You know, you got a life expectancy of about 10 to 12 years and a 20, 30-pound dog. That should be more like 12 to 14. But because they've been so inbred and they have so much congenital and acquired disease that comes with that, their life expectancies are going to be considerably shorter. So bear that all in mind as you're thinking about getting one of these guys. They're going to go for about between $5,000 and $8,000 depending on where you live. Doesn't matter how poorly they're bred. People are charging for it. Good friend of mine bought a Frenchie. He had a little Yorkie that got hit by a car. And he was just, you know, racing. He's got three sons, just racing to get another dog, another puppy in this kid's lives, just to help with the absolute tragedy they went through and the hurt they were feeling. So he said, "Hey guys, what kind of dog you think you'd want to get, you know, for your next dog?" And they were all in consensus saying, "Hey, you know, French bulldogs are really cool." So he went out and spent $7,500 on a puppy who, you know, right out of the gate wasn't the healthiest of specimens. He spent a lot of money. Luckily, his good buddy is a veterinarian. He had two cherry eyes. I don't know if you know what cherry eyes are, but basically the third eyelids on the lower lid, the third eyelids turn inside out, so it looks like they have two pencil erasers covering the bottom part of their cornea. They need to be repaired surgically. There's been a whole plethora of problems with this dog. He's like, "Man, this is the most high-maintenance thing I've ever had in my life because I've never had problems like this with any other dog before." I'm like, "Well, you chose to get a Frenchie." So case in point, you want to do your due diligence. So what can go wrong with Frenchies? Well, where do I start? So you get suckered into wanting one of these things, and you know you're gonna end up with some paybacks a lot of the time. So let's talk about congenital acquired stuff you're going to see right out of the gate. So the number one problem I'm going to see with Frenchies that you're going to start appreciating while they're still within that first year of life is brachycephalic syndrome. And brachycephalic syndrome basically is a perfect storm of respiratory difficulty. It can comprise of all of the things I'm going to discuss at the same time. That's not uncommon. It could be some of these things. It could be just one thing, but it's so severe that it's problematic. So we're just going to go from the front of the nose downward. the two slits of the airway comprising the nose, the little holes there that they breathe air into, those are called the nares. And so we commonly see in French bulldogs stenotic nares. So that instead of having nice open nares that can accept a good amount of air to come in, they have these little slits. And so right out of the gate, the air does not get into the nares well, and they struggle to breathe. That's surgically correctable. We do what's called a rhinoplasty. See, we go in there, and we actually surgically open up those nares. Not the most fun thing for the dog to go through, but at least it is correctable. That's problem number one. Problem number two. By the way, I'm not ordering them in terms of commonality. I'm just numbering them as in 1, 2, 3, 4. These are the various things that can go wrong with the upper airway of a Frenchie. So the pushed in face, the look that many people tend to like, they find it endearing, can be so excessive that it causes turbulence of the flow of air through the nares or through the nasal sinus because everything is so bunched up. Think of an accordion when it's all pushed together. The air is going to flow very turbulently because you got these acute turns. You have a lot of folds that it's got to go through, and it's like traveling through a dense maze versus you have a more elongated muzzle like your normocephalic dogs, such as the Labrador Retriever that have a normal muzzle. You know, air is going to flow much more smoothly through those more elongated and less twisty turny nares. It's just a matter of getting everything bunched up. That's problem number two. Problem number three, many of these dogs have excessive soft palates. So if you take your tongue and feel the roof of your mouth, you'll feel the bone plate that is called your hard palate. If you go further back to get behind the hard palate, you'll feel the palate gets softer. That's called the soft palate. That's comprised of a fat pad that lives just north of that soft area. And in many Frenchies, it's excessive. It looks like a big like punching bag back there. And it kind of floats around, causes them to snore a lot. It can be so excessive that it actually gets sucked into their airway and causes partial asphyxiation. And so it's elongated soft palate. That is correctable. Surgically, I not uncommonly do soft palate resections where I just resect away a portion of that tissue and then close it up, give it sort of a tummy tuck, so to speak. The sinus issue is not correctable surgically, by the way. Backtracking for a second. And then we're going to go further down the airway and we're going to get to the trachea. Many Frenchies are born with what's called a stenotic trachea. So it's very often anywhere between 25 and 50% narrower than it would be in a comparable breed of that size. And we see this in practice quite a bit, especially when we're going to spay or neuter these guys. And we go to pass the endotracheal tube and we're using a trach tube like way smaller than we'd be using for any other breed of this weight. And it's because that trachea is going to be narrow. So think of like breathing through a straw, a big like diameter straw, and then shrink the diameter of that straw by 50%. Air is going to go through a lot more thinly. It's going to require a lot more effort to get the same amount of air through that thinner straw. That's kind of what they're contending with. So now think about if a dog has all of those things at once, which again is not uncommon. That is a perfect storm of I can't breathe, right? It can even reach inhumane proportions. So do your diligence before you invest in one of these puppies because you want to make sure you're not investing in a tragedy. More congenital stuff. I'm seeing an increase in this in the last 3 years or so. So all Frenchies are born with a certain degree of hind limb bow-leggedness. So like the knees kind of bow outwardly. And we call that an angular limb deformity. Well, as they're becoming more popular and people aren't doing their diligence in breeding properly, these angular limb deformities are propagating more. The angular limb deformity dogs are getting rebred. Nobody's caring to look. And as a result, we're now seeing luxating patellas as a result of the angular limb deformities getting more and more severe. So think about the back legs. They're supposed to be straight if you're looking at them from like the front of the leg, should be straight. Should be a straight line from the hip all the way down to the ankle. Well, these dogs have a bowing at the level of the knees because the femur and the tibias are bowed. And as a result, if you think about the insertion points of the patellar tendon that run over the patella or kneecap, it's supposed to run over it with the insertion points directly above and below the patella. Well, if we have a C-shaped leg, and think of the C shape with the convex portion of it facing outward from the knee, those insertion points are going to be medial or just to the inside of where the patella resides, and it's going to want to pull it towards center because the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. The result is luxating patella in the medial direction. So the condition is called medially luxating patella. Patella is not there for decoration. It serves an important purpose. It stabilizes a joint where there's a lot of force across it because of the girth of the quadriceps and gluteal muscles. It creates stability and congruency of the joint and alleviates a lot of the force that goes across it. So when it's not in the right place, it causes pain. It can make the dog susceptible to injury deeper within the knee, such as the cruciate ligament or the meniscus. And you can have pain outwardly just from the defect itself, or even more pain when deeper injury in the knee occurs because of it. So these are commonly seen within the first year of life. Most of them are diagnosed within the first 2 years of life in the Frenchie. So it used to be that I occasionally saw this issue in French Bulldogs. Now I'm seeing it, probably see about two cases a month where I'm diagnosing a novel case of luxating patella and we have to surgically correct these. So bear that in mind. That is a real issue, and that is a completely 100% inherited issue, and it's very preventable. So those are all the things that we can see in the first 1 to 2 years of life that are going to be problematic for your Frenchie, that are going to cost you quite a bit of money, and the poor puppy is going to have to go through just to get its basic genetic needs righted. So down the road, we can see acquired problems. One of the poster dogs of eye problems are the French Bulldog. My girlfriend, Jill, is an ophthalmology technician, and so she works at an eye specialty clinic, and there's a board-certified veterinary ophthalmologist in there, and she sees French Bulldogs all day long for corneal ulcers because they commonly suffer from dry eye. Really sad. She's starting to see them come in really young with dry eye. It used to be something we saw as the meibomian glands that make tears in the eyes conk out, you know, at middle age or later in life. But these poor dogs are coming in at 3, 4, 5 months old with these dry corneas and getting ulcers. And, you know, it's really troubling to her. And because of that, you know, these dogs have these angry eyes, and she sees Frenchies all day long. She knows of one ophthalmologist that fills in. She flies in to cover the main ophthalmologist there when she's out of town. So she's what's called a relief doctor. And she saw her for the last time last year. She said, I'm leaving the profession. I can't do ophthalmology anymore. And she said, really? But you're an ophthalmologist. Like, why? And she said, because of the French Bulldogs. I can't see this anymore. It's too heartbreaking. I'm seeing them younger and younger and younger and more severe, more severe, more severe. And honestly, every time I see a French Bulldog on the schedule, I'm cringing because I know it's going to be a little tragedy right in front of me. You have these people with all their hopes and their dreams for this puppy and being a family dog, you know, with these severe eye problems so young. You know, it's got to be really tough. So, yeah, I mean, she became a regular relief vet where she just fills in for other doctors back in Massachusetts where she lives. She's no longer specializing in eyes, which is crazy. Not an easy thing to achieve, becoming a board-certified specialist, and she just walked away from it over French Bulldogs. So what can you do to protect yourself? I think the biggest thing is, you know, don't go on Craigslist looking for French Bulldogs. Don't even go on just referrals to breeders, because your friends that are referring you may not really fully know what needs to be done to prevent having to deal with these problems, spending all that money and dealing with the heartache of these animals that aren't, you know, very healthy. So first and foremost, I would recommend going to the French Bulldog Kennel Club and becoming a member and, you know, visiting their forums. I would recommend this for any breed. You know, just go to the Kennel Club. And then, you know, post, hey, I'm in the market for French Bulldogs. I want the best possible genetics. I want show quality. I want the very best that's out there because I want a healthy puppy. I love French Bulldogs, but I don't want all of the genetic baggage that comes with these guys. I want a healthy puppy for my family. Can you recommend breeders in whatever state you live in? For me, it would be Florida. And then you're going to get some good recommendations. And these breeders are going to be doing the right thing. If you want to do your own diligence and know what that right thing is, number one, you want both breeding animals to be 2 years of age or older by the time they have that litter. A lot of congenital disease is not discovered or is evident until 2 years of age. So it's also unhealthy for the females to be breeding them south of that time also. That's another consideration, but from just strictly a genetic perspective, breeding south of 1 year of age, whether it's a sire or the female, you could be unknowingly passing along inherited genetic disease. So that's your bare minimum right there. You want OFA certification of the knees. OFA is the Orthopedic Foundation for Animals. Orthopedic Foundation for Animals started with just checking for hip dysplasia, but they've now gone into many other health metrics in breeding animals. So you want knees certified, you want hips certified. We not uncommonly see a disease called leg Perthes disease in Frenchies. We want to make sure the breed, you know, that tends to be, there tends to be a genetic link to that one as well. I just recently did a hip surgery on a Frenchie with leg Perthes syndrome. So we want to make sure there's no dysplasia, no leg Perthes in these animals. So you want OFA certification for knees and hips from an orthopedic perspective. And then you want the eyes certified, and I would want the heart certified as well. So you want OFA certification for all those things. So you can do your own diligence. Hey, I want to see evidence of OFA certification. I want to see pre-breeding examinations that were done within 2 months of breeding these animals. You want all that stuff because there's other things that these dogs can acquire down the road. And that number one single thing is skin allergies. I would say our poster dog for skin allergies is the French Bulldog. When I look at a lot of, I would say maybe even the majority of money that people are sinking into the maintenance of these dogs from a health perspective, skin allergies probably number one. Luckily for the sake of the French Bulldog, medications like Apoquil, Cytopoint have come out that are really effective for lung, or really effective but also safe for long-term use. Up until 2011, all I had was cortisones, which work but long-term can cause all kinds of bad side effects. I had antihistamines that I could use that are really safe and okay for long-term use but don't really work that well. I was really handcuffed for the first, like, I graduated in 2002, so I had 9 years of, like, struggling to manage skin issues, and then Apoquil came out, and shortly thereafter, Cytopoint came out, which is a long-term injection. They're both similar but slightly different. I feel like sometimes I have Frenchies lined up coming in for their Cytopoint injections. And you know, they work and they're safe, but they're not cheap, you know. And a lot of these dogs are having signs of skin allergy as early as a year of age, a year and a half of age, and you know, you factor in the price of a Cytopoint injection once every 1 to 3 months for the life of that dog, that can add up. So you can quickly wrap your head around the notion that, and these are true metrics, whatever you pay for that French Bulldog, you're probably going to spend 5 to 10 times that amount in its veterinary care in the life of that animal. And that may be even conservative, right? So the last thing I'll tell you to do, get pet insurance on that dog. And you want to get that pet insurance like at the first puppy visit when nothing is wrong with that dog yet. I mean, we're 8 weeks old, we're 12 weeks old. You have your first visit. Veterinarian sees nothing wrong with that dog. Get that policy right then and there because there's no pre-existing. Because you wait until that pet's even 4 months or 6 months, oh boy, you could have your first four pre-existing conditions in there. I had this one patient, Frenchie. By the time this poor dog was 4 months old, I discovered bilateral luxating patella. I discovered stenotic nares. I also discovered already having skin allergy tendencies by that age. So we have three pre-existing, right? I can't do knee surgery on this dog because the growth plates have to be closed. So we're looking at about 10 to 12 months old before I can repair these knees. But that's what's in the future of this dog. I got to open up the nares. I got to wait till she's fully grown for that as well. So I got to open up the nares. We got to do knee surgeries. Well, guess what? These poor folks, these poor pet owners, nice people, good people, they didn't have pet insurance. And so all of this is now on the books, and I can't take it away. It's in the medical record. And these are pre-existing conditions that are not going to be covered. So get that pet insurance and watch the pet insurance that you get. You don't want to get just any pet insurance. They pull the same shenanigans as the miserable human health insurance companies do. They bend over backwards and go out of their way to not pay the premiums. So I would say the most reputable company out there is Trupanion, T-R-U-P-A-N-I-O-N, Trupanion. Most of the pet insurance companies out there might call themselves Pets Best or Veterinary Pet Insurance, VPI, or something else. But in the back the back scene, so to speak. There is a human pet insurance, or I'm sorry, a human health insurance conglomerate that's actually owns that pet insurance company. Most likely, Trupanion is strictly a pet insurance company. So I'm not saying they're perfect, but I think they're better than a lot of what's out there. So, you know, do your diligence, get that pet insurance, OFA certification, go through your kennel club to get breeder recommendations, do all this stuff, and you may, you have a better chance of ending up with a nice family dog that is a French bulldog that's not going to cost you a fortune to keep it healthy, and hopefully will be in this world for you, for your companionship for years to come. So that's it. That's my episode for today. All about the Frenchies. Everyone who has one or is in the market for one, I wish you luck. I wish you well. You know, they do come with their issues, but, you know, if you go in with an educated mindset and you are doing everything you can to minimize the potential for that and all the things we talked about, you know, there's a good chance you're going to have a really nice pet there. And they are a lot of fun, I will tell you. It's my job to warn everybody and to guide you and to help you not make mistakes. So I don't want to be too negative on these guys because, you know, I do love my Frenchie patients that come in, and especially the ones that are of the healthier variety, and, you know, they're enjoying good qualities of life, and the families are enjoying good qualities of life with their wonderful pets. So enjoy your Frenchies. We'll see this time next year if they're maintaining their popularity, as they're making, many of them are making their owners broke with their veterinary care, but time will tell. Have a great rest of your day, everybody. Thank you so much for tuning in.